For more now on the political week that was, I'm joined by two of our regular political analysts, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Matthew Continetti of The Weekly Standard. Welcome back to you both.
Good to be here.
Let's start with this presidential charm offensive that we just heard about. We heard Don Gagne use the words patience and sacrifice among the people in the country there. E.J., what do you think? Do you think going on Jay Leno, cracking jokes, talking about basketball on ESPN, does that help the president with a jittery American public?
I think it does. I mean, he had that unfortunate slip on the Special Olympics. He's blessed.
Talking about his bowling score.
Bowling score. He's blessed that Tim Shriver, a lovely guy who heads the Special Olympics, kind of likes Obama. So he sort of said he appreciated the apology afterward. But other than that, I think this really works because there are a lot of people who watch Leno who listen to NPR, but a lot of people who don't. It's a very broad, mixed audience of people who don't necessarily key in all the time to politics, and that's helpful. And I think on his bracket, I think the best observation was from Nate Silver at 538.com, where he analyzed the bracket. Obama picked mostly favorites, but where he veered from the favorites, he tended to pick teams from the swing states. And what state could be more important to him than North Carolina, one of the closest states in the last election?
Matt, what do you think about the president's strategy here? Maybe not on the bracket,
clearly,
but on the charm offensive.
Clearly thinking about reelection already. You know, what strikes me is the Obama team seems to understand the economic risks involved in something like AIG. They say, they argue, and I think pretty persuasively, that the risks of letting something like AIG go under outweigh the risks of keeping it alive as a zombie institution. But what I don't think the administration quite understood was the political risks involved in keeping these institutions on life support. And that's how they got sideswiped with this outrage over the payment of bonuses. And so Obama's been playing defense, I think, in this week, trying to sort out his message. I think they were caught off guard. But now I think he's probably straight in the ship and has to kind of chart a course, to continue my metaphor, to get past these latest taxes.
Crazy tacking.
Exactly.
Let's talk about those bonuses, the $165 million in retention pay given to AIG workers. In the context of the big picture here and the stimulus plan, what do you make of this debate? Do you think it's important, or is this a distraction if you think about how they need to get this accommodated?
No, I think it's actually a central debate, and here's the reason. Since September, the federal government has been plucking these companies, these financial institutions, or even the automakers from the private sector and putting them in the public sector. And what no one seems to have realized until now is that the second that you do that, all the market rules are suspended. So when the defenders of the free market could say previously, well, these bonuses are being rewarded in order to compensate for performance, or because we want to attract the best talent, and so on and so forth, those rules no longer apply because these companies are now politicized. And everything involved, whether it's the basic management decisions or bonuses or even remodeling offices, becomes political.
EJ, there were pitchforks on the White House lawn today as they started digging the new White House garden. Pitchforks in a metaphorical sense out in the country among populist anger. What do you think happens with that?
Right. There was that great populist called Pitchfork Ben Tilden, and he'd be out there on AIG. And I think they misread this, or they didn't even think through the politics of it when it started, because AIG and these bonuses became a metaphor for a whole lot of people who put the economy in a very bad way, who were vastly overcompensated in the eyes of a lot of Americans. I mean, the top 50 hedge fund and investment fund managers earn 19,000 times what the average worker does. And that is a lot of money. And I think that AIG became a symbol of that, and that the Obama administration regularly talks about how it wants to make things more equal and more fair. And this was just totally at odds with its own message. And I think that Obama's desperately trying to make up for that, as Matt suggested.
I want to talk to you about the deficit now. Projections just got a whole lot worse. $1.8 trillion now projected for fiscal year 09, $9.3 trillion over 10 years. Matt, does this have to factor into what President Obama wants to do about moving this country forward?
I think it does, because so much of his budget was premised on this idea that we're going to return to robust economic growth pretty quickly. And if there's one determinant of the budget deficit, it is economic growth. And so much of his spending plans depends on having economic growth there. These new figures, then, I think, will kind of make not only Republicans, who aren't the best spokespeople for fiscal responsibility after the last 8 years, but the Democrats, specifically the Blue Dogs, the people from the Midwest, the Democrats from the South. I think it's going to make those Democrats think twice about supporting some of this spending.
But EJ, so far the message from the White House seems to be what it has been, which is we're gonna take this all on, the economy, the energy, healthcare reform, all of it.
Right. The White House view is that these projections are based on the economy at its very worst. And Peter Orszag, the budget director, likes to say he's fairly familiar with the previous head of the Congressional Budget Office, because he was the previous head of the Congressional Budget Office, and that some of his projections for the future were off. So that's part of their argument. But I think their broader argument is, especially on health care, where if you don't act on that, you're not going to deal with one of the big cost drivers in the future. And, of course, their cap-and-trade plan would actually raise money for the government, so in some ways. So I think they're going to try to ride through this. And ultimately, even though Matt's quite right, there are some moderate Democrats with some qualms, I think in the end they're going to come back, most of them, to the Obama program.
Thanks to you both. Have a good weekend.
And you too.
EJ Dionne of the Brookings Institution and Washington Post, and Matthew Continetti of the Weekly Standard.